Packers giving it up to Nelson Adota. Back to Beckers, who will let it fly. The magic of Paige Beckers. You bet.
Wow. Are you kidding me? Oh, my goodness.
That is the kind of awe that UConn basketball star Paige Beckers inspires. And she is only a freshman. Today, what makes her game special? And whether she can bring the Huskies back to the top? Then, it's been a headline-making offseason for the WNBA, so we break down a league that has been rising, on and off the court. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, February 17th. This is ESPN Daily. LaChyna, it is great to have you back on the show.
It is always wonderful to be with you, Pablo. Thanks for having me.
LaChyna Robinson hosts the Around the Rim podcast and serves as a basketball analyst and calls games for ESPN. So you are an extremely busy person. LaChyna, you just came off calling a game like minutes ago. Describe to me what your life is like in this new kind of era of broadcasting. How is it going?
Well, Pablo, I can pretty much sum that up in about three words. In the house. That is where I spend a majority of my time these days. I'm in the house, calling games, watching film, and that's pretty much my life right now.
I come to you, LaChyna, from a bunk bed inside an Airbnb, so I feel all of your pain. And I want to get into women's basketball with you, of course, and we'll get to the professionals in a little bit. But I want to start by asking you about the single biggest name that's been dominating the college game pretty much all year as a freshman. And that is Paige Beckers.
And a fresh possession here for UConn. Beckers with the mid-range and silky smooth on that shot.
How would you begin to describe Paige Beckers for someone who's unfamiliar with what she's been up to at UConn?
Well, Pablo, the word coming out of stores was that Paige Beckers was going to be the next coming of Breanna Stewart or Diana Taurasi, right? So that's high praise.
No pressure.
Yeah, none at all. She was the number one overall recruit in the 2020 class, and her arrival in college women's basketball was highly anticipated.
Williams, strong on the three. Beckers with the rebound and the putback. The first Beckers bucket of her UConn career.
We were literally salivating and watching her highlights from high school, wondering if she would be the player to finally get Connecticut back to winning championships, since, keep in mind, they lost in the Final Four in the last three tournaments, pretty much ever since Breanna Stewart left. Well, Paige Beckers is not only a great player, she has 649,000 Instagram followers, more than UConn legend Sue Bird, by the way. Wow. So when she became the first player in UConn history with three straight 30-point games, we knew something special was happening, and she really hasn't disappointed. I mean, her perfect field goal performance in the last 5 minutes versus number one South Carolina, that was quite the epic performance.
Beckers from around the screen calls for the lead.
And set the stage for what we've been seeing from Paige.
So her game and her style of play, how would you characterize it? What's made her so dominant as just a freshman making a debut this impressive?
Well, at 5'11", Paige really makes the game easier for everyone else on the court. Except her opponents, of course. She's an elite passer.
Beckers feeds a wide open Nelson Adota.
Perfect pass.
Her mid-range game is hard to stop, so she can make tough twos.
Beckers on the run out. The big Euro step up and in off the glass.
And last but not least, she is shooting 55% from three-point land, which she makes three of those a game.
Beckers fires. That's three.
That's never a bad choice, though, giving it to Beckers.
She can stroke it from behind the arc. She does some really special things in transition with the basketball, so that brings a lot of entertainment as well when you're watching her. But in the end, she just has a complete game. And when the going gets tough, when her team is in the crunch, on the big stage, Paige makes plays.
So, LaChyna, that question that you mentioned at the top, can she be better even or on par with some of these greats that have come through UConn? Where does she fit into that lineage right now? Because I saw a Hartford Courant headline that asked, is Paige Beckers the best freshman that UConn women's basketball has ever had? Is that insane to contemplate? Where are we on that?
You know, while the name Diana Taurasi is still floating around, it would be hard for me to say that Paige Beckers is the best freshman in UConn history. I mean, again, it was a very different freshman season even for Diana Taurasi because she had more talent around her. But I would say that this UConn team is playing to the level of that team from Diana's freshman year or even the team from Breanna Stewart's freshman year. And I consider them the two best players in UConn history. So I'm not quite ready to give Paige that yet. Your legacy in UConn women's basketball is made in the tournament. It's a little early to start having that conversation right now, but hey, we may look hindsight in March and say she was the best.
And as always with UConn LaChina, it doesn't stop with this star freshman. There's going to be someone else down the pike, and that person seems to be AZ Fudd, who's the next big star to come to Storrs in the fall. So what are you expecting from AZ Fudd? How does she fit in to what Paige Beckers has been building?
Well, Pablo, let me tell you this. AZ Fudd is the truth. And the scouting report before Fudd even committed to UConn was that she was going to play for the Huskies. She and Paige Beckers are really good friends. This is a win-win-win for Gino Auriemma. And I went out to the Bay when Steph Curry had his Under Armour Elite Camp for boys. And this was the first time he actually invited girls to the camp. And AZ Fudd was there. Cameron Brink was there. AZ beat the boys in the three-point shooting contest.
After I finished, I looked over to like the crowd to see everyone, and all I saw were all the boys jumping up and like running over to me, so I guess I beat him. What I didn't know was that Steph was going to shoot after me. Steph definitely beat me in that round, but I won for the campers, so...
And Steph was thoroughly impressed with how much of a pure shooter she is, and that is really what stands out to you about AZ Fudd, is she can knock down shots. So when you add that to Paige Beckers' ability to create and her passing, whoo, UConn's going to be trouble for years to come.
So as the tournament goes, I do want to look ahead here because somehow it is mid-February, which means that March is somehow right around the corner. So who else is worth keeping an eye on as March approaches beyond the Huskies here? Who surprised you? Who are you watching for?
Well, the NCAA Women's Basketball Committee just had their first reveal this week, and the top four seeds were South Carolina, UConn, Louisville, and Stanford. And I agree that those are all contenders. However, my leaderboard for favorites to win a national championship are definitely NC State and the Michigan Wolverines. Now, NC State has a balanced upperclassmen team led by who I think are two of the best 3-4 combo players in the country, in Ja'Kia Brown-Turner and Kayla Jones. And they also have an All-American center in Elisa Cunane. The key word with them is upperclassmen. Now, Michigan is probably a surprise as a Final Four pick, but they have arguably the best undersized post in the country in Nas Hillman. She stands at 6'2", but don't forget she put up a 50-point, 16-rebound game already this season on the road against Ohio State. Michigan, like NC State, again, they have those veterans. And in a season like this where COVID has been bumpy, there's been shutdowns, just a different type of year, I just think the teams that have juniors and seniors that are steady and have been through the battles are going to be some of the favorites.
So, LaChina, the theme running under all of this, from your job at home to what you just described there with the tournament chaos, is the fact that this pandemic is upending everything. And we're sort of hearing that, okay, maybe some of the conference tournaments might be canceled entirely. Obviously, there have been postponements, cancellations due to COVID-19. How would you describe what the rest of this run through the tournament is going to look like?
Yeah, Pablo, one of my concerns with the NCAA tournament is that with all the COVID shutdowns we have seen, and don't get me wrong, the conference offices and even the coaches have done a great job of rescheduling and moving pieces around. I don't think that can be done with the NCAA tournament. So if you get a positive test the day before your first round game and you have to shut down for 10 days of the NCAA tournament, your tournament's over. So, and that would be heartbreaking. You know, so the NCAA really has their work cut out for them in creating a bubble in Texas for the women's tournament for the biggest 3 weeks of college basketball season. And I don't think it's going to be easy. And unfortunately, I think we may see COVID have an impact on who raises the trophy on that final day.
And to get you on the record, as you look into your crystal ball here, you've named a couple of contenders that you really like. Who do you think is, provided that we get to this point safely, who do you think is going to win this whole thing, LaChyna?
Well, again, I really like NC State. I like Michigan as kind of my surprise team, but I'm going to go with the South Carolina Gamecocks. They were robbed last season, Don Staley's crew, of their opportunity as they were the number one team in all of college basketball headed into what was supposed to be the NCAA tournament. That didn't happen. I think they come back, they steal it, they get revenge. I'm going with South Carolina.
All right, LaChyna, up next. I need to talk to you about everything that has happened in the WNBA's offseason and the big move that Candace Parker made.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, LaChyna, I think the biggest story of the offseason for the professionals was Candace Parker officially joining the Chicago Sky, her hometown team, as an unrestricted free agent.
Back to our breaking news from the WNBA. Former WNBA MVP Candace Parker is committed to play for the Chicago Sky after 13 seasons with the LA Sparks, sources telling Ramona Shelburne.
And it's worth noting here, Candace Parker was an institution basically in Los Angeles with the Sparks, but she signs this two-year deal that seemed to be a very strategic decision that would allow her to finish her career in her hometown of Chicago. So what did you think when you heard the news?
Well, Pablo, I'm not going to lie. The writing was on the wall that Candace Parker might be on the move. Now, this is all speculation, as Candace Parker has laid out that this decision had a lot to do with returning home.
Regarding anywhere else, no. It was Chicago or Los Angeles were and have always been my only two places that I wanted to play. I felt like the basketball that's in front of me, I wanted to play in Chicago.
But the tea is that I'm not sure how much Parker was buying into what Derek Fisher was selling. Now, he is now both the GM and head coach of the team. And the Sparks lost Chelsea Gray in free agency to Vegas, who Parker was very close to. We all know about the famous benching of Candace Parker by Derek Fisher 2 years ago in the playoffs that didn't go well.
Are you physically okay?
Physically, mentally, everything's fine. There's nothing wrong with me.
Are you surprised that you didn't get in the game more?
Yes, for Fish.
And Candace has a very well-documented history when it comes to coaches and leadership of the LA Sparks. So while this is definitely a trend that we're seeing in the WNBA as a result of a great CBA, a lot of player movement, I am not sure Parker felt like she was set up for success in LA, but that's just me.
So, LaChyna, if you could remind us about this new CBA, it's a big deal. It's a collective bargaining agreement that kicks in this season. How big a deal was it? What were the major topics that it covered?
Yeah, Pablo, that's a good question, especially as we're looking at free agency movement, because in my opinion, this was more of a holistic CBA. And I think that's impacted how players have looked holistically at their lives. For example, yes, there was an increase in salary for players. They can earn up to $215,000, at least starting off in this first phase. There was upgrade to travel. They no longer have to share rooms, which may seem like a small thing to us, but it's huge to these professionals. Paid maternity leave was a part of that, and ensuring that these players that want to be planning for the family side of their lives can get paid if they happen to take a year off. There's new fertility benefits as well for family planning. Other changes are marketing monies were added to team budgets so they can pay players in the offseason that don't want to go overseas and play. Just an increased overall investment and a potential for a 50-50 revenue split for the WNBA and its players by 2021, which could bring even more money into the picture for these players.
So when you take in Candace Parker changing teams as she did, LaChina, what is her sort of seizing her own agency here and making this choice for herself? What does that say to you about the WNBA and her, and how rare is that sort of a decision?
It's not very rare. And even before this CBA, you know, there's been players that have forced trades because, again, these women and the structure of their lives is very different in that they spend so much time overseas playing. When they're playing in the WNBA, they want to try to be close to home. They want to be playing in a situation where, you know, they're not just thinking about what's happening in terms of the encore, but also everything, all different aspects of their life. So it's not necessarily that new, but we are seeing more trends where free agents are making moves. And I think, you know, Candace Parker felt very, it seemed liberated in a way by making this decision, because the expectation is often that you're going to spend your entire career in Seattle because you're Sue Bird, or you're going to spend your entire career in Phoenix if you're Diana Taurasi, you know, but that's not for everyone, and that's okay. Candace Parker deciding to go closer to home seems to be very much in line, not only with what we're seeing in the WNBA with trends, but just in our world in general.
LaChina, I need you to help me make sense of some other really big moves that took place this offseason, because free agency has been open since January 15th. And after the dust settled, I'm looking at this list of enormous trades. We have the Dallas Wings ending up with the first overall pick in this year's draft. We have the Seattle Storm getting Katie Lou Samuelson at forward. We have the New York Liberty, as you alluded to before, getting star forward Natasha Howard. So starting with the Liberty, I suppose, let's work backwards here. They were the team that was the worst in the WNBA bubble. What does the addition of Natasha Howard do for their pre-existing aspirations and their pre-existing young star in Sabrina Ionescu?
Yeah, well, there was a lot of excitement around Sabrina Ionescu's arrival. And unfortunately, as you know, that was cut short due to her injury. And I think that definitely impacted the type of season that New York had last year overall. But Natasha Howard is an interesting WNBA player. I mean, she had a stretch where she was arguably the most decorated player in the WNBA because the championships were literally following her. She went from Minnesota winning a championship to Seattle winning two. That's three rings in 4 years with two different teams. And she's been Defensive Player of the Year, Most Improved Player Award. But second-year head coach Walt Hopkins of the New York Liberty coached Howard when he was an assistant at Minnesota. So he knows her game. And Sabrina Ionescu, in an offense that requires versatile forwards, Howard is going to fit perfectly. And there's an automatic trust with Walt Hopkins.
So the championship right now, it resides in Seattle with the Seattle Storm. And they acquired Katie Lou Samuelson. They have Kiki Herbert-Harrigan. They'll probably get Sue Bird back. It's looking like their veteran guard, who was last seen, by the way, on the cover of GQ. How does all of this impact, LaChina, their chances of making another championship run?
Well, Seattle still has their work cut out for them, in all honesty, Pablo, because Natasha Howard is gone. And to me, she was a big part of what they did. I mean, she was the perfect complement to Breanna Stewart. And they also lost Alicia Clark to D.C., who was arguably their most underrated player as a defender and a shot maker. Now, the cupboard is not bare. Yes, they have Sue Bird. They have Jewel Lloyd and the reigning MVP of the finals, Breanna Stewart. But those complementary pieces become more important as the league has had some teams that are now stacked coming off of this free agency period. I think it's yet to be seen what moves help Seattle.
So I want to get here to the Dallas Wings, because they now have the number one overall pick in this year's draft in May. What do you think they're going to do with this pick, LaChina? And what do they have going for them headed into this new season?
Well, I think this number one pick is going to end up with Charlie Collier if she decides to go to the WNBA. But Dallas has a very exciting young team behind the league's leading scorer in Arike Ogunbowale, a young star in Satu Sabally, a new head coach in WNBA legend Vicky Johnson. And Dallas needs that centerpiece that will be the future of the franchise on the court, but also a captivating personality off the court. And she also has a relentless work ethic that is great for young culture.
So as we now ask you to do something very unreasonable and predict and look into your crystal ball once again, this time on a season that has not even started yet, LaChyna, what are you seeing? What is your crystal ball telling you in terms of who should be the favorite, at least, to win this WNBA title?
Well, going back to Chicago, how could you not just be looking forward to the combination of Courtney Vandersloot, Diamond Shields, and Candace Parker playing together, right? And let's not forget about Allie Quigley. Now, again, Chicago's been so close to getting over the hump. You have to kind of start with the conversation there. But Bill Laimbeer has reloaded with Chelsea Gray, adding the microwave Raquana Williams to a clutch team that's deep with Angel McCautry, fifth player of the year in De'Erica Hamby, and the league MVP in Asia Wilson. Now, will Liz Cambage play? We're not sure, but if she does, it is over for everyone else. And my last favorite is the Washington Mystics, and they're probably number one on my list. Alicia Clark was the perfect addition with the style of play that Mike Thibault wants, but we will finally get to see Tina Charles and Elena Deladon on the court together, and that, along with Natasha Cloud, hoping she signs any day now, sounds like the recipe for a WNBA championship to me.
So, LaChyna, before I let you go here, I also do want to zoom out for a second, because the story of the WNBA over the last year or so has been about a lot more than just the basketball. It's been about how this league has been at the forefront of a movement and conversation around social and racial justice in America. And how do you see that conversation continuing in the WNBA as the season progresses this year? Do you think that's going to continue? How is it going to evolve?
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is, how do you follow up helping to flip the Senate? I mean, what we saw happen last summer and then into the Georgia Senate race is historical when you look through the lens of athlete activism. But what I know for sure is that these women are very in touch with who they are as people in society, as Black women, as a majority Black league. And so that won't stop because it's the fabric of who they are. And if there's something that I would say is very special about the WNBA is that, you know, they know what they stand for and they are not willing to compromise that at all.
Yeah, I would point out flipping the Senate. I don't know how you follow that up with an encore.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. Going to be tough.
LaChyna Robinson, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for joining us from your studio, a.k.a. your home.
Thank you, Pablo. Always fun with you.
Coming up, Howard University's head basketball coach, Kenny Blakeney, tells us why they shut down the most promising season in school history and what happens next.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Here's another story I want you to know. When I last talked to the head coach of the Howard basketball team, Kenny Blakeney, it was back in July at this moment of dizzying promise for the school. Kenny had done something that nobody at an HBCU ever had: get a five-star, top 100 basketball recruit to enroll, McCour Maker. And the season prior, Kenny's very first season at Howard, the team had been 4-29. And after he got McCour, future Vice President Kamala Harris was welcoming him, a 7-foot, possibly one-and-done draft prospect, to their alma mater over Twitter. It was a lot. But even more overwhelming is how so much, and also so little, has happened since. Last week, Howard shut down its men's basketball season after postponing or canceling 11 different games due to an outbreak of COVID-19. The team had played in a grand total of just 5 games this season, winning one of them, their last one, on December 18th, before multiple Howard players tested positive in January, including McCour Maker. And so the most promising year in Howard basketball history is officially over before it ever really got to begin. So I called up Kenny Blakeney to ask how and why the decision to cancel his season got made.
Well, on January 1, Pablo, we had an outbreak of COVID on our team. And it was something that was very tough on our guys. And when most teams go through the COVID ordeal with their teams, it's typically 1, 2, maybe 3. Our numbers were so high that it really put us in a situation that we couldn't fight back from. And we saw things after, I think, diving a leap a little deeper in terms of some heart tests, some echoes, some EKGs, some x-rays and different things like that, that our players weren't healing at the rate that we needed them to heal to continue the season. So it was in our best interest of our student athletes to shut down the season.
How difficult was the call to say, we need to end this thing before this gets out of control and even worse?
I think from my seat, it was an easy call. And I think from our athletic department seat, you know, the alternative is something that I think nobody wanted to deal with. And that is potentially sitting in front of a bunch of cameras answering questions about something that has gone drastically wrong. And that's not something that I wanted to do. It was more important for us to kind of shut down, rebuild, and hope to move forward in a better way once we're capable of doing that.
Kenny, we had last talked because of McCour Maker, who was the game-changing, program-changing, conference-changing prospect that you brought into Howard. He only played 2 games. He was dealing with a hip injury and then the virus himself. When you look at everything that happened, given the expectations and the promise and the hope for this season in specific with McCour on the court, how frustrating has all of that been to not really get to coach him on the court in the way that you guys had dreamed?
Yeah, I think, you know, there was a buzz and an excitement, right? And I don't want to use frustrated or disappointing, because I think when young men, especially in our case, we're talking about the Howard University men's basketball program, they gave everything that we asked. McCour was a huge part of that. In December, he was not with our team because he was still out with his injury. He was going to be cleared on January 2nd, but like you mentioned, and it's been reported on Instagram from McCour, is that he did test positive for the virus. So that knocked him back a couple of weeks. But having him here, having him part of the Howard family and community, he's a Bison man, and we're thrilled that he's here.
Do you know what his future is going to be at Howard? Because his reputation entering was that maybe he is this sort of one-and-done caliber prospect.
I know that he is going to be continuing classes, and he's going to be working out. Like, his thing right now is, let's see if I can get better. I know in the past, he has taken a look at entering the NBA draft. So, you know, if you just kind of follow the tea leaves of the past, I think that may be something that he takes a look at again this year. I don't think it penalizes him for taking a look, but he's going to be continuing with his classes. He's going to be working out, and his spirits are great. I had a great conversation with him yesterday. He's thrilled. He's in his classes. He's doing well. And I think this experience in DC for him has been one of growth.
It's impossible, Kenny, to not think about what could have been with McCourt, though. And I look at your schedule, and you had this big game versus Notre Dame at home in DC. That was going to be this marquee event with McCourt. That got canceled, of course. Given how this season played out, or in this case, did not play out, what do you do to continue that forward motion that had been created by McCourt's commitment to Howard? Where do you go from here as the coach of this team?
I think that's a great question, Pablo, and appreciate you asking. It's one of those things, man, where McCourt coming to Howard is documented and it happened, right? And everybody knows that. There's more people that actually know about McCourt coming to Howard than they probably do know about our season being canceled. So we can take that storyline and really run with it. You know, to have a guy that's a top 16 player by ESPN choose Howard, you know, a place that has been, we call it the dream factory, definitely allowed us to have some momentum and some conversations, I think, and entries into recruits that we probably would have a tougher time getting into the door. We think that the group of guys that we have coming back with the guys that we have coming in will really continue the momentum that we've built. Not knowing if we're going to have McCourt or not, it may just have a different buzz to it.
Kenny, I look forward to talking to you when your dream actually resumes.
Thank you so much, Pablo.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.